What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Par None podcast. Ryan with my other host, Brady. Welcome back. It's been a little while. This is our Ryder Cup reaction show. Coming to you a little bit delayed, but it's our podcast, so we can do whatever we want. So Brady's been traveling. He's in Idaho right now. I'm in Dallas, so we're on different times. So apologies for any lags in that, but it's just life, so we're going to deal with it. I mean, obviously, besides the Ryder Cup, not a ton of news, so we're going to focus pretty much talking about that. Obviously, everybody knows by now, pretty disappointing showing from the American team. We had talked about it on this podcast a bunch. I wouldn't say we were pro-Europe, although we did talk about that a little bit. But more so, like, I think we were just realistic in that we didn't have a lot of, like, outside hope for Team USA. I think we both kind of thought, like, Europe was going to be a problem, and they actually ended up being a problem, just like we said. So, I'd love to get your first takes on it, and then we can kind of bounce around, like, specifics. But just, like, general, what did you think of the Ryder Cup? Go for it.
Yeah, so key takeaways were Rahm and Rory are hard to handle. They just were like machines out there and totally manhandled us, I felt like.
Yeah.
And then the other highlight that I saw was Ricky got shut out. No points. Mm-hmm. No points for Ricky. I think he sat out all of Saturday anyway, so he didn't get as much opportunity. But
yeah.
0 points for him, and I know that he was like the favorite for captain's pick, kind of the fan favorite. So it's kind of sad to see him get shut out, but the course looked really cool. Like we talked about, I didn't get to watch it. We were traveling the whole time, so I listened to it on PGA Tour radio on XM. Luckily, we had reception through the mountains the whole time, which was actually kind of incredible. listened to it and didn't get to watch it. But from the highlights that I saw and the news coverage before the Ryder Cup, the course looked awesome.
Yeah.
It looked really cool. It looked like it was designed for a Ryder Cup with all the crowds on every hole. Like there was like 10,000 people per hole on that final day or something. So absolutely packed, looked really cool, kind of like a stadium style course. Some really cool holes, like 3 or 4 drivable par fours, which made it a little bit more exciting. So what'd you take away from it?
Yeah, so to your first point, I know that they built the course for the Ryder Cup. So I think they said they built it on purpose with that, like, stadium style. And then I think I was listening, you know, obviously it's set up for the Europeans. So they thought, what did they say? They thought they're like, we're better from 180 yards out, and the Americans are better from 180 yards in. So we're going to – that's why, I mean, you know, you'd never see a course with that many short par fours, but because they can do whatever they want. They thought they were better. And it turned out they were right. So, yeah. So that was interesting. I mean, just seeing like a short, it almost looked like with the distances, it almost looked like the courses that we play where, you know, you'll get a lot of sub 400 yard par fours when you go to a local like Muni. So like yeah. That, I kind of was like, oh, maybe I could actually hang at this golf course yardage wise. Everything else, though, the rough just looked absolutely treacherous if you hit it anywhere but the fairway. I think, you know, it's kind of just what they always say on the Ryder Cup. Like, we're going to set up our courses to benefit our style of play. They're going to set up their courses to benefit their style of play. And, you know, again, we've continuing our shutout in Europe, like, for another 2 years or whatever it's going to be. So Bethpage should be fun. I mean, again, it'll be set up. Their fans are pretty chirpy, and I know Bethpage is already chirpy, even like at the U.S. Open and stuff, so I can't imagine how brutal the fans are going to be to the Europeans in New York in 2 years. So that'll be an interesting kind of dynamic just to see how that plays out. Bright spot for the Americans was Max Homa, 3.5 points. Ricky was a disappointment. Although, you know, I mean, I guess – to your point as well, like Ricky didn't play that much.
Yeah.
Which I never really understand. I mean, like, you're a captain's pick and then you barely play the guy. I don't understand that. Like, a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, you know, like mixing it up a little bit more even time. Again, I know you're going to use your best guys, but like, why put them on the team and then sit them down all day?
Yeah.
Or, you know, for like almost two straight days worth of time. So I always think that's interesting. You know, I thought Matt Fitzpatrick was kind of the same way on the European side, like barely used. I know his Ryder Cup record's not great, but it's like, why are you there? Like, why put him on the, put a guy on that you're going to use, in my opinion. So I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I thought Max Homa played obviously really well. There's some other bright spots from a couple of Americans, but overall, I just didn't see, you know, what I thought was interesting was just like the lack of, and I know there are a bunch of reports out there about hats and wanting to be paid and fractures. A lot of that ended up seemingly to be untrue. But it just seemed like more, the Europeans were more, or I'm sorry, the Americans were more like focused on other things outside the golf course. Like they were much more like, I don't know if they're distracted or just not that fired up or just not that prepared, maybe a combination of things. But it just seemed like they were a bit just flat. And, you know, besides that one afternoon on Saturday, they just kind of didn't play well.
Yeah. No, it did seem like they were flat. And I think the feeling that I had was like the Ryder Cup is such like a heated event, and like how fired up Rory got with that dispute on hole 18. Like they're like so passionate about it, and it's like, it's in their blood. It's like in their heart. They play more with their heart. And I feel like the USA was like overthinking it or something, or too much in their head. And they're playing more with their head than they were with their heart. And, you know, it's probably good for like the majors and most courses and most events. But for the Ryder Cup, it's like different.
Yeah.
And I got that feeling because they didn't do like interviews Thursday beforehand or Friday morning maybe, or sometime when the European players and captain were doing interviews. USA didn't do any, and they were just like, felt like they were like putting wall up, shutting people out, and the Europeans were like having fun with it and enjoying themselves and you know, sharing information about the tournament. The USA was just like really blocked off and too serious about it or something. But I felt like we need to loosen up a little bit and.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I always think it's kind of an interesting thing, just like in sports in general, when you talk about like how do you prepare or how do you like focus in on like a big event versus like a regular season event. You know, like if you've had success all season doing it away, why would you change your whole approach just because this is a big deal? Are you almost like making it worse or making it better for yourself? I don't know what the answer is, but I think it's an interesting debate of like, you know, you get to the Super Bowl, you've been winning all season, and now you change how you prepare because it's a serious, or it's the most important game. So I wonder how much of that kind of bled into it. And I don't know, you know, I know Zach Johnson's taken a lot of heat. I don't know how he was as a captain. A lot of people were not happy with obviously how he captained the team. I'm a little bit, like, again, I'll give Zach Johnson a little bit more like rope because, you know, like these are all I don't know. You have a captain, and I know there is some strategy to it, like pairings and who you're sending out and that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, like these guys are adult professional athletes. Like they have to, they're the one who swings the club. They're the one who makes the score. Like it shouldn't, I don't know. In my opinion, it's the same. I think this way for a lot of professional sports. Like, I don't know how much the coach or the captain actually does, because these guys are, like, at the peak of their sport. And if they don't perform, it's really on them, I think, a lot of the time. Like,
and, what, 10 out of the 12 of them are in, like, the top 15 in the world? There's, like,
right.
Like, they're the best in the world. If they're on the team, they should be able to perform, no matter who they're paired with, when they go out, how many times they go out.
Right.
Yeah, I feel like when you're literally the best in the world, you should be able to go out there and win your match, or at least compete.
At least compete. I think that's the thing that I took away from this is like the Americans didn't really seem to compete. You know, I didn't see I mean, there were some. You know, I mean, I know there's always going to be some, and I'm not like shitting on America, but like at the same time, there wasn't enough of just like let's battle this out to the end, like grit it out. Like it's shot for shot really good, and somebody just happened to drain a 12-footer where the Americans lipped out. I mean, you know, like, it wasn't just, like, close. It was very much, like, just, like, lie down. And it almost, like, they, like, I don't know, just almost like they didn't care. Like, oh, we got beat. Not a big deal. I mean, you know, the video of Scheffler crying and stuff like that. So I'm not, you know, I'm sure they do care. It just doesn't come across that they really put as much effort into it. But I just think, you know, I hear that in football, too, when it's like, oh, a coach has lost the locker room. I'm like... like, in a regular job, you can't do that. You know what I mean? It's like, if you have a bad boss, it's like, well, I just got to figure out how to get my job done in spite of my boss being a jerk or yeah. whatever it is. You know, so I don't get that mentality of like, well, he's lost the locker room, so they're not going to play for him. It's like, okay, I mean, that doesn't, you think as adults, like as human adult men, you could come together and be like, in spite of this guy, we can still go out. Like, we know how to play this game, so let's just go out and do it.
Yeah.
So I just think, I always think that's interesting because I'm just like, really? Like, it's the coaches, the yeah. coaches lost the locker room. Like, you guys can still, you guys can still play the game. So
say, maybe in like eighth grade football or something, right. but not Ryder Cup.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. 100% Exactly. Right. So I just think that's, I think that's an interesting just point about it, but yeah, I don't know. Hopefully the American, it'll be interesting to see what the team looks like in 2 years. You know, like, I don't know. I don't know if this like boys club really is like that good anymore. That sounds really bad. Yeah. But you know, like Justin Thomas is fine. I know he was a hot topic. I think he scored a point and a half, which is yeah. fine. I don't think he was that great. I don't think Spieth was that great. Obviously Ricky wasn't that great. Cantlay, you know, continues to play pretty well though. He, you know, again, there was some controversy around him and, Xander was fine. So it's like these top dogs really just didn't do much except for Max Homa. Nobody. Brian Harman, I think, got the tied for third most points at like two or something. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just wasn't, yeah, not a lot of excitement from the American team. Not a lot of things to take away to be like, man, I'm really excited about that.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah. I feel like Homa will be a captain's pick for sure. If he doesn't qualify for Bethpage, he'll be a captain's pick just because yeah. of his performance.
Right.
Spieth was terrible.
Yeah.
Like, listening to this when Spieth and Justin were paired, well, they were paired every time, I think, but I think it was the Saturday morning match. Or no, it was probably Saturday afternoon. They were all over the planet. Like, JT would be out of bounds on one hole, so Jordan would finish it, and then the next hole – Jordan would be out of bounds or in the water hazard and Justin would have to play by himself. So like there was almost no chance. I mean, you can't win playing like that.
Yeah.
It sounded like, I mean, it was very rare that both of them were like finishing a hole or like in it. Like it was never when both of them had a birdie putt.
Right. Yeah, I think that's just, I mean, again, I've been saying it from the beginning, and I know people disagree with me, but it just seemed like that whole Justin Jordan, like, we're best friends thing, so we automatically get to play together, and, like, every round, I'm just like, again, we could switch it up, like, you know, put Ricky with one of those dudes, and just, like, change it up, you know, if it's not working, do something different just to, like, get some fresh blood, you know, like, fresh way of thinking, because I think there is, you know, again, back to the, they are adults and they just have, but I do think there is a lot of pressure on Justin and Jordan Spieth to like perform a certain way. It's like, they don't have to play together. Again, they're adults. Like they don't have to play every round together. It's like, you can ride in a cart with somebody else. Like you don't always have to be the same thing. So
yeah,
I don't know. I'm just not impressed with the, I mean, again, I don't know if I could do any better, but just not impressed with a lot of like the mindset or whatever it seems to be like, how they do things with the American Ryder Cup just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And I honestly think they need to go back to, I think we need to get rid of so many captain's picks. Yes. It used to be like one or two, and now it's like somehow turned into six. And it's just like, either just put a team together, you know, like you would do in another sport where it's like, you know, not all of these guys are just like 1 through 12 at their position. It's like, well, we had to draft, we had to trade, we have to be strategic about like, we run in a slot wide receiver because he can do a certain thing well. So it's like either build a team that way or build a team based off of a point system. But this whole like mixing and matching and just like, I'm going to pick this guy because we're all buddies in the captaincy and we're all buddies on the team. Obviously doesn't seem to be working, so we need to like figure out another way to do it.
Yeah. Or like the Sam Burns pick was, I feel like he was mainly picked because him and Scotty were like good partners, and then Scotty went out with Brooks and they got absolutely manhandled. So yeah. It's like, if you pick Burns to play with Scotty, at least put him out there.
Yeah.
The other surprising pairing was Homa Harmon. And they did really well. And then, like, in their interview after, they were just, like, laughing, like, telling him about how, like, prepping for the Ryder Cup and stuff, the team events and, like, team bonding, how they became super close in the last 6 months. And
cool.
It sounded like they were just, like, super good buds, which was really cool to hear, but really surprising. Like, those two seem like opposite.
Yeah. 100%. And that's awesome. I mean, like, that kind of stuff I really like. Yeah, and Harmon was surprisingly, like, adequate. You know what I mean? I was looking at the points, and I mean, obviously, European got more points, so this makes sense. But out of the top five or six, seven, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Out of the top seven point getters, six of them were Europeans. Max Homa is the only one out of the top seven. And Tyrrell Hatton actually surprisingly went 3.5 points, and so did Victor Hovland. So, like, Fleetwood, Rahm each had 3. Robert McIntyre had 2.5, and then Cantlay is the next highest American with 2. So, yeah, we kind of got it taken to us a little bit.
Yeah.
I hope that, I don't foresee Wyndham Clark or Brian Harmon being a part of the 2025 Ryder Cup team. Just because, again, I think those guys, lost my screen there. I think those guys, you know, they qualified because they won a major. And I mean, I just don't, maybe I'm wrong. I don't foresee them winning another major, at least not in the next 2 years. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of room for A, those, you know, like different blood to come in, and B, it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward with like LIV,
yeah,
and the PGA Tour with this, like, you know, this deal to have a deal or agreement to have an agreement, and what that'll look like by the time even the President's Cup comes or the next Ryder Cup comes. I wouldn't be surprised. Do you think Tiger gets the nod as the captain in 2025?
Would love to see it. Well, I don't know, though, because I was expecting him to be – I know that he wasn't like a vice captain, but I thought he would at least be there or get a shout-out. Because, like, Zach was saying about all the people who have helped him and stuff, and he didn't say anything. I didn't hear him say anything about Tiger. Which,
yeah,
in these events, usually he's either there or you hear people say, yeah, I was talking to Tiger, and there was no mention of him, which I was surprised about.
Well, I heard on one of the reports that they called him and asked him to come, and he said no.
Oh.
He didn't want to go. So...
he's like, you guys have no chance. I'm not going to be involved.
Yeah, he didn't want to be affiliated with this year. And I don't know if it's just because of his recovery, you know, and he can't, like, walk around. I don't know. So, but I just feel like, I can't remember who was talking about it, and I kind of agree with it. It's like, you know, 2025, Bethpage, public course, is kind of going to be a big, seems like it's, like, shaping up to be kind of a big deal, Ryder Cup. And yeah. I think it's going to be two big names as the captaincy, and I think you got to go Tiger Woods. I think he'll get picked. We'll see. Maybe not. I don't know who the big name would be. It should be Tiger Woods versus Greg Norman. He's not European, but that'd be funny. So I think he'll get a big name. I don't know who's. I really don't know who's like a bigger old name on the European side, but.
Hey, Donald might get the repeat invite here. He did pretty dang well this week.
Yeah, he did. No doubt for sure. I wouldn't be so. Who's like? No, he's South. Who's like? I'm trying to think of like a good European golfer that's like maybe on the senior tour. I keep wanting to say big names that are not European.
Well, I keep wanting to say big names that were not included because of LIV. Like, I was like, Stenson, never mind. He was supposed to be the captain this year.
Well, isn't that the craziest thing too? I think that's so crazy that he got after, you know, hindsight, you know, Brooks Koepka is on the Ryder Cup and yet Henrik Stenson gets stripped of his title. So that's interesting.
There wasn't an agreement to have agreement back then.
Say that again.
There wasn't an agreement to have an agreement when they disbanded Stenson.
Yeah, that's true. I could see, like, what, Nick Faldo maybe being asked, or Padraig Harrington versus Tiger Woods would kind of be a cool deal. You know, Faldo is one of the best Europeans that's alive right now, so I think that'd be interesting.
That would be the vice captains, was it Olathabal?
Olathabal, Molinari.
Molinari. I heard he's like a crazy stat guy. That he always does all the stats for the European team.
Really?
So he apparently he dives deep into the stats and finds the best matchups and like those yardages information.
That's awesome. Like
that. But apparently he's super good at it, and he's like the guy for Team Europe.
Interesting. So yeah, it was Francisco Molinari and Eduardo Molinari, Thomas Bjorn, Nicholas Kolsarts, and Jose Maria Olathabal.
Nice.
So, yeah, I mean, not a bad group there. Jose Maria Olathabal could be a big, you know, he's kind of a big name, or at least was, at least when we were kids. So, I mean, that could be an interesting choice too. I kind of want Fred Couples to be a captain. I think that would be awesome, but I don't know. I heard, again, you never know what's like, he kind of has put his foot in his mouth twice about this Ryder Cup over the last couple months. So they're like, that might keep him out just because, you know, he's kind of Freddy and he's kind of a polarizing figure. It seems like people love him or they think he's like a total prick. And I don't know if you can be that like loose tongued and just, I don't think he cares. Like, I think he just is like, yeah, Cam Young will be in Italy and he's not. And he's like, well, I don't know. I just thought he would be there. He's not there. So he doesn't seem like ever too concerned about like being wrong. So
yeah, well, I'm pretty sure he was a vice captain in 2016 at Hazeltine. I know Tiger was here or in Minnesota, and I'm pretty sure Couples was too. So both of them have some past, but if one is involved, the other probably will be.
Yeah, I mean, I think if Tiger is the captain, then I think Freddie gets a vice captaincy for sure. Yeah, I mean, Tiger has, you know, like a lot of some good relationships with some of those like older golfers too. So that could be a fun team. And Tiger's not really part of that boys club. So I think it'd be kind of fun to just break all of that. Even the captaincy seems to be like these guys just kind of rotate. Let me just see.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. It's great. Like,
Furyk, Zach Johnson, who did you just say? Couples is on that list. Davis Love, Stricker.
Oh, yeah.
I know Stuart Sink was the other one. So Stricker's
got to be in line soon to be captain.
Well, he just, you know, he won. He was just captain. What? Whistling Straits.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And they won. And people were, like, crying like he was the best captain ever. So Stricker's done the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup.
Has Freddie done the President's Cup?
Freddie has done the President's Cup, but never the Ryder Cup, I'm pretty sure. So, it'll be interesting. I mean, again, I think we keep just saying, I keep talking in circles, but I'd love to see just a revamp of how they do things. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just weird to me. Talking about kind of like the golf course setup, it's wild to me that the style of play in golf can be so different that how you set up the course pretty almost seems to guarantee the victory for that side.
Okay, I was going to bring this up next as well. I'm glad that you did.
I'm just grabbing something to drink.
Have you ever seen a course set up so well for – I know that they try to do it every year, but this year it seemed like they really executed. Usually it's like, oh, we're going to grow a little bit more rough on the left side of this hole and like put a bunker here because it like it'll make it a little bit more challenging for this distance. But this year, they like literally took clubs out of the USA players' bags.
And yeah.
I know that they have like tried to do that in the past, or better distances are better for certain teams in the past. But this year, it made a way bigger impact than normal, I feel like.
Yeah, I think I noticed that. I think the reason for it is because they made this course specifically for the Ryder Cup. So like from the moment of conception and design, they had this in mind. And that's what I'm saying is like, it's weird that the European game is so much different than the American game that they can build a course knowing that the Europeans are going to play a certain way. Because this course had to be in the works for how many years ahead of time. So it's like almost like it doesn't matter who is on the team because the style of play is so different. And I don't know if it's just the weather or the type of courses they're playing at or how they learn how to play golf. But there's this whole, it's just crazy because it's just like, so I'm guessing they set that up. They built it and are just like, this is where the United States just wants to hit it long. They don't care where the ball goes. So I think that's the difference in taking a course that already exists and trying to like shape it for a certain style of golf. It's like, well, we built this specifically for this type of golf. So, it is interesting, which is, I guess, why you maybe don't see, I mean, I don't know, I shouldn't say that, but you know, like you don't see a ton of Europeans winning the US Open always seems to be an American because it's just like, can't hit it short. All the holes take forever to get there, 600 yard par fives. So it's just bomb it. And then, you know, we're better from 180 yards in. So if we can just hit it far and then chip it up, we're going to win.
Yeah.
So I just think that's an interesting, I think that has to be it, right? Because it doesn't seem to take into account the specific golfer. Like this course is like, you know, because of Rahm and Rory and who's on the team, this is how we're going to set it up. It's just the style of play. And, you know, I haven't studied the style of plays like a ton, but it's pretty clear to see like Europeans are much more accurate with longer clubs. And it seems like Americans are much more accurate with shorter clubs.
Yeah.
Which you think that would give the Americans an advantage no matter what, because I feel like we always hear like short game is where the scoring happens. But if you can drive a par, you know, like if you can hit your driver straight on a par four that reaches the green and the Americans are in 3 feet of rough, then you have an eagle putt every time or a majority of the time, whereas your partners, you know, may not be getting out of the rough. So it just changes the whole thing. But you're never going to see that style of golf anywhere else. You know, like you're never going to see a course that short with that many drivable par fives unless an event comes back to Marco Simone. So I think that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, it was crazy. I am very curious to see how they dial up Bethpage. And I know that we always want to make it a home course advantage, but after seeing what they did at Marco Simone and how much an advantage it like actually was, how we can utilize that course for the US players.
But, yeah.
I was there. There was a wedding that I went to in 2021 in New York, and it was in like the neighborhood of Bethpage. So I went there to check it out. Unfortunately, didn't have time to play it, but it was cool to be there. It's like a state park, so you literally can just go there, walk around. Really, really cool. There's, I think, like four or five courses there. There's a lot of courses. So from the clubhouse, you could see like 10 like tee boxes because they were, or at least five. I don't know where all the other ones were, but it was just like a lot of first holes of each course. It's cool to see the black tee box was right there. So got to check that out. Got the scorecard. It said 2025 Ryder Cup on it.
Wow.
Yeah, but it was really cool. Wish I got to play it. It looked crazy hilly, thick rough like it always is. But I'm really excited to see how the USA kind of tweaks that course for advantage, because I'm not sure when the PGA was there. Who won that one?
Good question. Let's look it up.
I feel like Tiger's done well. He needs to be on the team for that one. As the player, not as a captain.
Yeah, I mean, that would also be awesome. Let's see here. So 2002 US Open, won by Tiger Woods. 2009 US Open, won by Lucas Glover, Ryder Cup captain. Here, let's see. You said the PGA was in 19, Brooks Koepka won it. So three majors, US Open in 2002, 2009, and then PGA in 2019. So Tiger, Lucas Glover, and Koepka are the ones that won the major championships there. And then it's hosted two FedEx Cup playoffs, the Barclays, in 2012 and 2016. And then we'll hold the Ryder Cup. So that'll be interesting.
I feel like Tiger, Glover, and Brooks will all be on the 2025 team in some capacity.
Yeah, I mean, I think Brooks is on there barring an injury because he's just too good. Like, he just seems to figure out how to get it done, and he's fiery. And yeah, I think that's good. That's a good call. I mean, I think with his success, he'll have to be there. I really hope Tiger's part of it. But yeah, I think, again, they're just going to set it up for, I mean, Roy and Rahm will be fine because they can hit it a long way, but they're like, you know, they're kind of outliers outside this normal, like, type of play.
Mm-hmm.
And if Ludwig Åberg kind of develops into the player everybody thinks he is, that's the hard part. Is I don't know. Again, they still rat wax the floor with us, but it does seem like a lot of Europeans are kind of coming over to our style of play.
Yeah.
As far as just like hit it 340. So I don't know when that'll, I don't know if that'll eventually kind of be like, yeah, I don't know. It seems like the bigger names play more of our style of golf, but there's these, you know, and it might always be for the Ryder Cup because they're always going to need 12 guys. And there's, I don't know if there's going to be 12 guys who consistently play on the PGA Tour. You know, I know like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think like Tyrrell Hatton, Fleetwood, obviously like Robert McIntyre.
Højgaard
and even Åberg play a lot on the European Tour. So they're playing that type of golf a lot more than a Rory or a Jon Rahm is going to do it, or Victor Hovland, because they're mostly now over here.
Yeah. Yeah. And have played over here in college over here. And
right. So yeah. I think that'll be interesting.
They seem to go back to their roots very quickly and very easily. And they play that European style whenever they want to.
Well, I saw this interesting video of Gary Player talking, and I don't, maybe I sent it to you. I can't remember. If not, I will. I'd love to get your thoughts on it, because he was talking about like how golf has more, like, just basically how you play it. So basically it used to be like, make sure that your left hip clears and your hands will kind of come along with the swing automatically. But you need to worry about using those big muscles. Same thing that I've taught in baseball my whole life, right? Like, these are your big muscles, so use these muscles to drive. And he's like, then like this American version of golf came in where it was like, everything's in your hands, so try to hit everything with your hands. And now everybody's worried about your hands kind of being this independent, like, maneuver, and nobody kind of focuses more on like the big muscles, like driving. I don't know if that has any correlation to kind of this European versus American game. And I know there's like, you know, you can get into that debate, like go down a rabbit hole about Tiger plays with his hands and is a field player versus a point and shoot player or whatever it is. But it was just an interesting dichotomy to hear like Gary Player, who's one of the best ever, be like, stop worrying about your hands. Just let them come through automatically, and more worry about your big muscles kind of using that. So I just thought that was interesting. I don't know if it plays into anything.
Yeah, I don't know. The game that the Europeans play, I feel like there's a lot more, they need to make shots and control trajectory, high, low, work the ball against the wind. In the U.S., I think, like, a majority of the golf is, like, just bomb it and hit it high and hit it straight. And we don't need to hit low run, like, run up to the green, or we don't need to worry about crazy wins. Typically, it's a heck of a different style game. A lot less bunkers in the U.S. So, that probably has, you know, something to do with it, where use the hands to get that distance. I don't know. That's a really interesting point, but there are definitely two completely different ways to, there's a lot of different ways to think about the golf swing, but big muscles compared to it's a hands game.
Yeah. It's funny because I feel like, and I don't know how you grew up learning the game, and you actually probably spent a lot more time on the course as a kid than I did, but I feel like at least my dad, and maybe because he's old school, but I kind of grew up learning that ideally that European game is the kind of game you want to learn. Like, that's how you should learn how to play the game of golf. Like, you know, straight accuracy over distance was my dad's biggest thing. Like, you know, he always talked about growing up, like, you know, well, like Fred Funk is 250 yards, but down the middle of the fairway, where Tiger's 300 yards and all over the place. And he's like, you know, he's like, unless you have Tiger's talent, you'd be much better off being 250 down the middle of the fairway every single time.
Yeah.
You know, so I think I do think that's an interesting, you know, like when we talk about, and I know this is like the Ryder Cup reaction show, but we try to translate that stuff to our game. Again, I think, like, I'd be interested on your take, because I know, like, even us, you and I, when we test clubs, we're always looking like, what driver is going to give me more yardage? What's going to be faster ball speed? We do pay attention to dispersion. Like, we don't ignore it. But I do think, like, even though we will, like, kind of say, like, yeah, in the amateur game, like us, it's much more important to be in the, like, we're going to score better from the fairway a majority of the time, most likely. I still find myself, like, when I go out there, trying to be like, how far can I hit this? Especially if I play with guys who also hit it far, because I feel like, I don't know if it's emasculated or like I'm leaving something on the table if I'm not at least in their wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. So even maybe holes that it's like, I shouldn't hit driver here. I should hit 3-wood. I'm going to hit driver because that guy's going to hit driver. I don't want to be sitting back 30 yards from him, even though it doesn't necessarily dictate score.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree that the accuracy and control was a focus growing up. When you were talking about that, it made me think of a Brooks Koepka take, I think from, well, probably a couple years ago now. I think it was right before the whole LIV thing. It was when he was still playing on the PGA Tour, but how much of an advantage distance is. And he was saying that growing up, teach kids distance. Like, literally swing as hard as you can, still have control, but learn how to hit it far. And then once you learn how to hit it far, then dial in the dispersion and try to tighten it up a little bit. But
interesting.
It's really hard to do it the other way, because you can't work backwards. You have to learn the distance first, and then you can gain control. It's hard to have control and try to get distance, because you're going to lose a little bit of that control, so then you need to dial that back in anyways. So based on Brooks Koepka's take, learn distance first. It's the most important, and it gives you such an advantage. And then you can dial in your dispersion from there. But so that made me think of that. The other thing was how you said looking at distance for new clubs. I feel like most amateur golfers, they come to people like us to get more distance.
Yeah.
They correlate the dispersion and the accuracy more with their swing, and that's something that they can control, but they want the club for the distance, and then it's their job to keep it straight.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wonder how many people realize how little, well, maybe you disagree with this, I don't know. I feel like there's very little difference in actual distance gains club to club. Like, if you get, you know, the Stealth from last year and the Stealth 2 from this year, what'll they'll say? You're like, oh yeah, you're gonna gain on average 4 yards, 5 yards, 7 yards on average. You're like, you know, so you may hit 1 10 yards further, you may hit 1 1 yard further. I wonder how much, you know, I don't know how true those claims can be, because every single season they say you're going to gain on average 5 to 10 yards, let's say. Well, that can't be true because, you know, there's been guys hitting at 300 yards forever, but nobody's hitting at 400 yards.
Yeah.
It seems like, right? So, like, in 10 years, if we're going to go by those averages, we should have everybody hitting at 350 to 400 yards, and that's not happening. So, like, how much actual yardage is being gained on a club? And how much, you know, like, there's got to be a max out, because we have guys, even the best guys in the world, you know, Rory, John, I mean, they hit at 330, which is long for sure, but it's not that much longer than guys were hitting it 20 years ago when we were kids. Like, Tiger was still hitting it 300, 310. So really, I mean, like, the max, again, is like, you can max out, like, oh, that guy hit 380, which was not happening for sure.
Yeah.
But I don't know if the average has really, like, you haven't gained that much as opposed, it is a lot, but I mean, it's not gaining as much as what's marketed to people.
Yeah.
Because we're not gaining 100 yards every decade on our driver. Cause and also, like, every one of us would be hitting it 350 to 400 yards. Right. Does what I'm saying make sense? I don't even know. Maybe it doesn't make sense, but it makes sense in my head.
Yeah. So the claims, I don't really ever pay much attention to them. The claims, I believe that when they're testing them, that they're seeing those distance gains. But from the 2005, maybe 2000, like late 2000s, they started increasing the distance of the shaft, and that helped them gain the club head speed.
Right.
So they put it on the robot, longer shaft, club head travels faster, you see faster, right, faster ball speeds. So I think that's like the main distance gain claim. They're at 45.75 inches now, and that's only because they leave a 0.25 inch gap so that they're under the 46 inch limit. Most people should probably be playing a 44.75 or 44.5, just because those drivers are way too long, but the manufacturers do it because technically you can swing the club faster and get more distance, but that's only if you're hitting the sweet spot. It's a heck of a lot harder to do it at a 46 inch length.
Right.
So that to me is the biggest distance gain claim.
Interesting.
But the thing that I've seen year to year in these clubs is not so much a distance gain. There are certain clubs that I definitely have hit further than others and I can get better ball speeds, but the spin rates are so much different in all the clubs. And even the stealth came out, I was a fan of it. It was a little bit higher spinning club, and then the Stealth 2 I feel like was a little bit lower spinning, but that was for me. So I think it's the spin rate difference between year to year, and I haven't seen so much of a distance gain. I've been pretty consistent in my ball speeds. I've gained some speed over the last 5 years, but that was because I did the super speed swing training, and that helped me gain the ball speed. But I don't think the clubs had much to do with it.
So. Mm.
It is interesting though, because players like Rory and Rahm, they are increasing their distance like slightly year after year.
Yeah.
But they're also like training for that, like their bodies for it.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a combination of both, but like you said, I don't think that the claims match reality, where a player's not going to pick the driver up and gain 4 yards.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I think it's worth noting here, You're about the 45.75, and I know I fall into this trap, and I actually need to fix this because I just use the length. I use the standard length. It's probably too long for me because I'm looking, you know, and again, these guys hit the center of the face every time, so it's different. But Rory, 44 inches.
Yeah.
Dustin Johnson uses 45.75, but he's 6'4". Tiger is right now, it says he's at 44 and a quarter, but used 43 and a half for a long time. Jordan Spieth does use a longer shaft at 45 and a half inches, but Tony Finau only does 45 inches.
And he's huge.
Huge. Ricky Fowler, 44.75. Brooks Koepka, 44 and a half. So literally all of these guys, Colin Morikawa, 45. Bubba Watson, 44 and a half. So it's just like all of these guys are using shorter. I mean, we should all be using, if Tiger Woods is using a 43 and a half inch driver shaft, then like, I don't think any of us, unless we're 6'4", have like a reason to not use, because Tiger's tall.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not a short guy.
He's like 6'2".
So if a 6'2" guy is using a 43 and a half inch driver, then we have no business using a 45 and 75 inch driver, probably.
Yeah. When I was doing fittings in the shop, I would pretty much cut an inch off 90% of the players' drivers. It makes such a difference in gaining that distance because you're so much more consistent. That inch makes a crazy difference. I order mine an inch short. I try to recommend for all my golfers to do the same because of how much of a difference it makes. And it's very clear that if all of the best players in the world are cutting their drivers down shorter than the 45.75, that they come off the shelf. Like, yeah. There's no reason that the average golfer should be playing it at that length.
Yeah. So do you then shorten your 3-wood and hybrid by an inch as well?
I don't shorten my 3-wood or hybrid. I've been thinking about taking like a quarter inch off my 3-wood, but I have enough control with that where I don't need to. And I'm actually not sure if the 3-wood, if those links have changed. I don't think the hybrids have. I don't know about the 3-wood for sure. I think the focus has been on the distance gain claims with the driver.
So, yeah. You don't see any commercials for a 3-wood distance gain 3-wood.
Yeah, I haven't felt that my 3-wood is too long at any point, and that I haven't been able to control it. So, personally, there hasn't been a need to cut it down, but definitely with the driver, crazy long at 45.7.
I was just curious if you see when you shorten the driver, do you see like is your distance still pretty consistent when you had a longer driver? You're just more accurate, or do you see like a closer, like gapping, but like a shorter gap between distances of driver and 3-wood when you use a shorter driver for you?
No, I see the opposite because I'm able to hit the center of the club face more. So I actually get more distance.
Fair enough. So, all right. I got to get on the shorter driver shaft stuff.
Yes. Highly recommend. Go cut an inch off right now.
Okay. Yes, sir. I'm going to do it. I have a saw. I can't. All right. Well, I think that'll do it for us. Anything else? I have nothing else.
Nope. That's all I got.
So what we walked away from is Americans need to redo how they do the Ryder Cup and shorten your driver shaft right now. So anyway, guys, thank you guys so much for watching. We will be back hopefully again. I know we keep taking these like sporadic breaks because life just gets in the way for us. But thank you guys so much for watching. We'll be back next week. Till next time, see you later.